Simplified SEO Consulting has DIY, done with you training, and done for you SEO options. So there is truly something to fit every practice owner's SEO needs. Check them out at simplifiedseoconsulting.com/modern therapist and use the code Modern Therapist for a DIY course or mention the Modern Therapist Survival Guide podcast during your consult for special offers.
Are you looking for ways to attract and retain private pay clients? Thryser is a payment platform for therapists built to help clients automatically tap into their out-of-network benefits and save on therapy up front. Check out our special link, join.thryser.com/modern therapist, and use the code Modern Therapists to activate $2,500 in free payments with Thryser.
You're listening to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide, where therapists live, breathe, and practice as human beings. To support you as a whole person and a therapist, here are your hosts, Kurt Widhelm and Katie Vernoy.
Welcome back, Modern Therapists. This is the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. I'm Kurt Widhelm with Katie Vernoy, and this is the podcast where we look at all of the things that affects therapists, their personal lives, the way that we practice, the way that we go about learning. And one of the discussions that we've been hearing, and this comes even from some of the students that I teach, is learning how to be a therapist in a COVID world where so much of our education has moved online. A lot of therapists and students who have signed up to be in-person therapists had their programs moved online, and just the transition into this kind of a learning environment has not panned out in the way that they had hoped. And I have been teaching at a couple of universities. I have some experience of this as an educator, good, bad, and otherwise. I will fully talk about some of my experience from the teaching end here, but also knowing how we approach learning in an online continuing education way. This is not just about students, but also how we go about learning as therapists, even after the fact. And we're going to be online for quite a while. COVID's not going anywhere. And at least at the time of this recording, COVID seems to be going up, not down. So
yeah.
This is some just kind of description of the background of where things have been and some suggestions for things that work. So I know from my end on this, Katie, that I'm hearing from students, I'm hearing from other educators, I'm hearing from supervisors of students are complaining this isn't what they signed up for. And educators and supervisors are like, it's not what we signed up for either.
Yeah, I'm hearing some of that too. I hear less because I'm not a professor and I'm not as engaged, but I have some clients who have signed up for master's programs and doctoral programs. And that's one of the biggest complaints, is that the education that you applied to, the education that you signed up for, is vastly different than what you're getting right now.
And to give a little perspective on my background, I have my therapist master's degree from an in-person brick and mortar program. I have another master's degree that I did in an online asynchronous program that is not particularly relevant what the content of that was, but because this isn't about the content of what's being taught, this is more about the approach of it. So I have been a student both in person and in an asynchronous online program. And when COVID hit in the spring semester, going into the summer semester, a lot of faculty members and a lot of students and our field at large had to scramble into this online sort of program.
Sure.
And I largely describe the education at that point as being, well, it's what we've got. And there wasn't a lot of prep for being able to go into it with the intentionality of teaching online. And a lot of professors tried to replicate what was in the classroom, the same kind of teaching styles. And I'll admit that I did this in some of my lectures too, where it's, hey, normally I'd be doing this 2.5 hour lecture. I'm going to do this same 2.5 hour lecture on Zoom. And it bored a lot of students with peers.
Sounds awful. It sounds so bad.
It's so bad all around. And given the responsibilities at the time of faculty, of students, there just wasn't really a whole lot of intentionality in being able to approach education in a different way on the fly. Some people did it better than others. But
sure.
Now that we are in the fall semester of 2020, where a lot of faculty have had the opportunity to at least plan for being what I'm going to classify as not bad. We also have had the opportunity for some faculty to be good educators and have transitioned to this synchronous learning online. So, and for those of you who don't know, asynchronous is not at the same time, you know, watch a video, post a blog on your own time. Synchronous is you have to be here on time for this Zoom class and have to be present for it. But there's a lot about our field that is about being in person, and especially for those people who were applying for grad schools over a year ago that thought that they were going to get that in-person experience, not getting it now. And there's a sense of frustration, especially because on the faculty end of things, there's a number of pieces that we have to know the technology. We have to know how to utilize Zoom in a way, you know, being able to use breakout rooms, being able to use the whiteboard function within a class, the whiteboard function of Zoom, not having a literal whiteboard behind you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because things like, you know, your webcam that just comes with your laptop doesn't necessarily have a focal point that's going to focus on a whiteboard. So if you're trying to draw things out on a whiteboard behind you, your students aren't getting what they would get if you were in the same room.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of just functional pieces that we don't necessarily train people how to be educators unless they go into a counseling education type program. And while we have a lot of faculty meetings that are, you know, just kind of sharing tips, these are not replacements for counselor education. And I don't know if this is unique to our field of,
I don't think it is.
It's just kind of like, well, you've got some advanced degrees and you don't seem too crazy, so go and share your knowledge with students. Good luck in figuring out how. But what this does from students' end is, you know, so much of what I remember from grad school is the interactions in class, the debates that would happen, you know, positively, the naturalness of being in the environment that created more support is missing now because a lot of therapists are really polite, good students that keep their microphones off and they wait until they're called on. That, you know, they might raise their hand on the Zoom call or they might, you know, use the raise hand function within Zoom. But it ends up becoming this kind of spoken wheel discussion where every question ends up getting run through the professor rather than being able to discuss and interact with each other in a way that adds to the education.
I see that, and I recognize that we actually grappled with some of these questions when we switched to an online conference. I think there's a lot that you lose when you don't have that in-person feeling, the capability to turn to the person next to you easily and effectively to be able to respond to what's happening, whether directed or as just a side question that you're not necessarily supposed to be talking at the same time. But I think it's something where, as we get stronger with platforms like Zoom, as we start understanding these things better, I feel like there's a mechanism to create high quality online education. But what I'm hearing is that that's slow to develop because we're asking, or not you and I, but like our profession is asking theoretically, people who are strong clinicians or strong psychologists or have some sort of appropriate background who typically just teach in front of a class or speak in front of a class, like we're asking them to actually become innovative in a space that even educators, I think, are struggling to navigate.
And I look at our field did more in the telehealth aspect of our profession
sure.
in 5 weeks in March and April of 2020 than we have done in the 15 years before that where I've been in the profession.
Yeah.
And this is a space where there's a lot of room to grow. And I see this as an educator. I see this as a parent with my own kids doing their own, Zoom classes, of ways of keeping people engaged and trying to replicate certain aspects of this. Because as much as I advocate for students and trainees and associates, there's also kind of this parallel process going on with the educators of, we don't have a lot of guidance in this that has had the time to unfold. And the educators are trying to make these adjustments too. And some are going to be more nimble and better at that. That, one of the things that I see is the most effective aspect of online teaching is, I ask that my students, when we have breaks in the middle of class, to get as far away from screens as they can, like go outside and just like have some opportunities to be away from being on screens all day. So that way you have the energy to come back and re-engage with the lecture or the activities that we're doing. But it's being nimble enough with the material to give students the opportunity for as much of a hands-on experience as they can, we would be doing some of the role play stuff in classes. Think of learning therapy techniques. All right, everybody go out into groups of two or three and, practice these things on each other in the room. We have breakout functions in our Zoom classes to do this. And people are learning how to do telehealth really well right now in this program, but that's not what they thought that they were signing up for.
Yeah, they're learning what they're going to need to use in the next year or so. But if they want to actually have an in-person office at some point, like, it feels like they're missing pieces that are really different. I mean, I think it's great because they're actually learning telehealth. I mean, I feel like we're still early on in that process, and role plays with fellow students have problematic features to them anyway, but like doing them online in a small Zoom breakout room and stuff like that, like, okay, that actually replicates what they're going to be doing. But the difference between an in-person interaction and a telehealth interaction, like, I couldn't imagine never being trained to do an in-person session, like through my whole grad program. Like, that would just be very strange to me, to then have to go and sit in an actual physical room with another person.
Simplified SEO Consulting's team of mental health professionals genuinely want to help you attract more of your ideal clients with a proven on-page SEO process using the strategies that are most effective for therapist websites. They know SEO is an investment, which is why it is so important to find someone who aligns with your values and understands the importance of building your private practice in a meaningful way. Simplified SEO Consulting hopes to be that team for you and your practice.
The expert team would love to talk with you during a free consultation to figure out the best fit for your SEO journey. Simplified SEO Consulting has DIY, done with you training, and done for you SEO options. So there's truly something to fit every practice owner's SEO needs. Be sure to ask if their innovative content network is a good fit for your website. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off a DIY SEO course with code MODERNTHERAPIST, or mention the Modern Therapist Survival Guide podcast during your free consultation for $100 off your done-for-you SEO program onboarding this spring.
Check them out at simplifiedseoconsulting.com/modern-therapist.
And this is where a lot of the research around the effectiveness of telehealth is just really starting to be robust enough. There's been studies out there for a while, but we don't know the effectiveness that this really has yet on therapists of being taught in this way. So some of the suggestions that we have are, really utilizing some of these breakout features to keep people engaged, because, worst case scenario is if a student's having to sit through webinar after webinar for a couple of years to get their degree, we're not teaching them how to interact. We're not teaching them how to engage with the material. We're just throwing it at them, which you and I have talked numerous times before on the podcast here about, that is like the worst way to learn things.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the challenge that I see, and this is something that I've been seeking out, and I think that there are people that are putting these out there. I think I saw a course on simple practice learning, but like, clinical efficacy on telehealth is something that I think all therapists should be learning right now, because there's a lot of therapists, if they're not doing it 100% like you and I are, they may be doing it at least a portion. Like I don't know that there are therapists that are only doing in person at this point. So all of us should understand the clinical efficacy of telehealth and should be able to actually not just recreate the in-person experience, but actually create a robust experience in and of itself that potentially recreates some of those elements. But also there's like the whiteboard feature and like these different things that create different opportunities. And so even in, at this point, training in telehealth, I'm having a hard time finding clinical trainings on telehealth rather than just the technology and the laws and ethics around telehealth. Mm-hmm. And so to me, if the whole educational system is having to shift to train in something, and granted, there's, you know, like all of the other pieces of clinical training, like theoretical orientation, okay, that's not necessarily impacted by doing it via Zoom. Like I think there's, you know, or inordinately impacted by doing it via Zoom. I think that there is an element of this where if I were a student right now, I'd really wonder if I'm getting the quality of training that I need to actually succeed in the field. Because if we don't know that this online training is, or education is, as effective as in person, if we aren't sure on the primary mode of therapy, although it seems that telehealth has great efficacy and I'm doing it and I feel like it's efficacious for my clients, but if it's something where we don't have a strong sense that what we're doing is working, we don't have the data to prove that, and we don't have data on the education system. I may have said that twice, but anyway, if there's this much uncertainty and our educators are not necessarily doing that great of a job because they're learning as they go, and it seems like that's getting better, which is good, I don't know if it would be worth it to do it right now. Am I wrong? Am I too pessimistic?
It takes knowing how people learn
mm-hmm.
in order to create effective online course content like this. And I say this because I had written a blog several months ago about online therapy being here to stay. And yeah. one of the pieces that, you know, I can't fit this into a syllabus, I can't operationalize this piece, but it's students' abilities to opt out of conversations that they don't necessarily have in a classroom where a professor can really see who's not engaging and pull them into a conversation. And this is especially around really difficult topics, differences in opinions about, you know, social issues, social justice issues.
Exploring cultural identity and racial identity.
And so without looking at those pieces, it gives people the opportunity to opt out of uncomfortable conversations. And this is whether it's students or whether it's in a continuing education sort of way. But part of what's missing in what you're talking about and why delaying, you know, continuing education right now or continuing your grad program right now might be a good idea is that even if you are fully participating, your peers might not be.
Yeah.
And if they're not, are you getting kind of the same education and the same exposure to diversity that you would in a brick and mortar program that nobody is selling on? Like, you know, our students engage really well in classes. But it is one of those really unspoken pieces of having a really good education. I mean, I know I make mistakes all of the time in having, you know, comments in you know, continuing education where I'm students, even where I'm faculty, of having other people with different viewpoints being brought up. And that is one of the things that helps make me a lifelong learner, is that I love when this stuff is pointed out to me, because, you know, I know a lot, but I don't know everything. And having some people who would normally not have the opportunity to opt out of a conversation have that option to not engage with the material in that way makes the education less robust. And that does have very predictable effects on the way that anybody in these learning environments is going to take the material that they learn and be able to apply it to clients.
So if we're saying potentially that people should delay or pause or whatever, obviously that is institution by institution, and it may not be an option for folks.
Right.
It also potentially negatively impacts the development of the appropriate workforce for what we'll be, I'm sure, talking about at some point in the next few weeks or months, is the huge mental health pandemic that is going or has started and will continue to ramp up. And so to me, maybe it's making a conscious decision about whether or not you continue or pursue your therapist education right now. But I think there's also opportunities within, you know, of course, I'm totally shifting positions now, but there's opportunities in online education. And I think we found some of them. And I've interacted with folks who've also found some. I mean, my assumption is that in a classroom, you break out into a couple of people and it's your friend that's sitting right next to you, and you kind of talk about whatever you want to talk about, whereas you get thrown into a random Zoom breakout room with another student, you know. As long as the awkwardness is navigated by the professor, it seems like that might be more likely to increase engagement among different classmates. And so there's a possibility that done well, there is the additional engagement that can happen with folks who are not necessarily as likely to interact in person and raise their hand and do those things. But on a virtual setting, they may feel enough more protected in their home space that they may interact. I mean, that was some of the feedback we got from our attendees, was that where people were more likely to interact in the chat or to do things than they would have in person. And they met more people than they would have in person because there was this opportunity for this electronic engagement. I think it's very different in a 3-day event versus a full grad program. But I think there are possibilities to actually use online platforms to improve education. I think the reason why I said like maybe this isn't the time is because I feel doubtful that the infrastructure is there at every school, and certainly at schools that are either underfunded or less concerned about the quality of education, they won't do it. But I think there is possibility there.
Well, and I think adding to that, also the schools that are less centralized in their teaching, that mm-hmm. when there's a really good team of faculty that know what each other's teaching. But ultimately, what you're describing is having an intentionality of deliberate practices within teaching, and deliberate yeah. practices being a part of the education. And, you know, all of my fandom for deliberate practice and getting feedback, but this takes that step of being really direct with students in all kinds of formats of, here's the steps that you need to do. It's not just trusting that they're going to take this information and be able to go and apply it,
yeah.
which is, you know, where I hear from students all over the place of like, you know, what am I really supposed to know out of my theories class, whether it's online or not? Like, you know, am yeah. I supposed to, yeah. at the end of the semester, be able to go out and just do these theories? No, I'm supposed to be able to practice them. And, yeah. and this is where the practice makes better. And that is something that I think that we're really missing in the way that we're approaching online education right now, is we're not creating those opportunities to practice and get the feedback from the faculty about, here's how to improve in this. And it's something that we're not conceiving well enough of, how do we get people to practice with each other when they are physically isolated from each other. Yeah. And this is those steps that need to be done in those breakout groups, is let's take this from just kind of this theoretical knowledge base and put it into a practical knowledge base.
It could mean more work for professors, right? Like instead of having a class where you go and you can have some of that interaction and that connection happen almost organically in a physical space, it's designing the virtual spaces where some of these things can happen. Whether it's how do you make sure that members of a cohort are actually engaging in some sort of connected experience? How do you make sure that if they're doing some sort of a role play or practical application, that they are doing it correctly, that there's sufficient, you know, kind of feedback on those experiences? But as I'm saying it, like, you should be this deliberate in person too. So maybe this is just, you have to be more direct when you're online because you don't have those kind of passing in the hallway conversations and mm-hmm. connection. Like you have yep. to kind of create those spaces deliberately. But I'm even thinking like, how much easier would it have been? I don't know what you had to do, but I had to like buy like a video camera because, you know, it was before phones that could record things. I had to buy a video camera and like tapes and stuff. I can just record a Zoom call. And that's my role play, and my professor can watch the thing remotely. And like, so I think that there is some benefit, and there may be some shortcuts that are helpful, but it is the thoughtfulness, and it is being direct and actually obvious in what you're teaching and why you're teaching it versus more indirect, trying to build insight and momentum with students who can opt out.
Right. And this is where, as educators, it's really easy to teach the same material year after year.
Sure.
You know, I can say that, you know, the first year of having developed a syllabus for a class, it's a lot of prep work to know yeah. I'm going to have 15 weeks of content that fits around a subject and activities that deal with this and be able to foresee out how this is going to play out. The second year is tweaking it, but third year on, there's not a lot of theories or techniques that really change year after year. And so it's really easy to fall into, I don't need to update much.
Yeah.
And we're in a transition year of this isn't working to do it the same way. And yeah. it takes going back to that level of thoughtfulness of teaching a program for the first time that is really, really different now. And those educators who are doing it well do it with this thought in mind of people aren't learning in the same way that they were before.
Yeah.
And they're also making adjustments because these people also have lives outside of their classes. They're dealing with their own mental health issues. They're dealing with their own responses to the pandemic and to social justice issues and elections and all of this kind of stuff that's in the news.
As well as different responsibilities in the home, right? Right. And then different capabilities with, you know, differing childcare stuff. And there's so many things that are impacting people right now.
Thrizer is a payment platform designed for out-of-network therapy. As a therapist, you would use Thrizer to charge clients for sessions and collect your full rate up front. From the client's perspective, Thrizer links to their health plan, so insurance claims are automatically submitted for them upon every charge. From there, Thrizer manages the claims end-to-end so that your clients don't have to worry about manually submitting super bills or getting on calls with insurance. The best part? Thrizer allows clients to only pay their co-insurance portion for sessions, while Thrizer covers the rest of your fee and waits for reimbursement on their behalf.
They also offer you an instant benefits calculator for free, allowing you to provide upfront transparency to prospective clients on their out-of-network coverage. Therapists only pay a standard 3% credit card processing fee per session with no additional fees. Visit join.thrizer.com/modern therapist to get started and use our promo code Modern Therapists to receive $2,500 in waived fees for your sessions.
And it's being acknowledging of that, but also helping the students understand that that's a parallel process that they're going to face throughout their career, because we're always going to be reacting to stuff in the news and we're always going to be having transitions within our responsibilities at home and at work and all of this kind of stuff. It's creating the right level of support. It doesn't have to be completely like, oh, this student's got these extra parenting duties while this student is, you know, fully supported by their parents and their only responsibility is being a student.
Yeah.
So it's creating the right balance of expectations for students too in this time that is another conception of how education and supervision and all of that needs to be taken into account too.
So we've talked a bit about kind of how educators may want to approach these things, how, you know, kind of professors, people who are leading these classes, how they may want to be more deliberate in what they're doing. We mentioned a little bit about the decision-making for students, but I think that there are students who this is like they need to get through the last semester, or, you know, they've started, they're committed, they can't delay. And I think that there's potentially some guidance that we can share with them about how to make the most of things during this time. But I do want to just kind of mention one other benefit I was thinking about before we step into that, which is if there is synchronous and asynchronous learning right now, that does actually open the possibilities for folks who have differing responsibilities and those types of things. There also is, I mean, I know that I went and I've spoken about how to get a job in a lot of classes at Pepperdine and Vanguard. Like there's just a lot of different little universities out here that I've gone and done that talk for. And there are people who are driving hours to commute to some of these in-person, or had been driving hours to commute to these in-person things. So they may have more, there may be more accessibility right now for folks who haven't traditionally been able to go to these in-person programs. And so for these people, the people who are saying, hey, I'm doing it now. I'm getting my therapist education. How do I get most benefit from it? And I want to just say my, because you're going to have all the answers. So I'm going to say my initial first thought and then I'll throw it to you. But if I were a student right now, I'd want to make sure that I was personally in relationship with my professors and being able to get feedback and acting on those things and making sure that I'm on base. I would want to find ways to interact with my peers. And I don't know if I would be the one that would be like putting together social happy hour kind of things. But it seems like there's a need from the student side to say, to advocate for some of those more personalized experiences with their professors and with their fellow students. So that's the only idea I have. Now, what do you say as a professor?
You're absolutely right. And I think part of what I've seen is, well, every class that I've taught online, there has been a group chat function that is not part of the class. You know, it's a WhatsApp group chat. It's a, you know, group text sort of thing. Students are already doing this, whether it's suggested or not. And it might be starting around content. It might be complaining about the teaching methods of a faculty. you know how these group chats go.
Yes. Yes.
But absolutely develop the personal relationship with the faculty. Take advantage of office hours, being able to get the career advice, even just get the FaceTime. Because, well, those group chats are potentially awesome and potentially just a place to vent. There's a part of that synchronous relationship that really does help develop your understanding of the material. It helps develop the opportunities that you have for future jobs and recommendations and all of this kind of stuff. It's also something where when you are finding that those group chats are devolving into complaints, it's being able to organize students together to be able to approach the faculty or the department to bring attention to the change that needs to happen. Because in any sort of institutional inertia, there is a lot of barriers to seeing how things can change. But right now, I think, is where I'm seeing a lot of faculty potentially being more able to be influenced in their teaching methods because there isn't a tie to, well, this is the way that we've always done it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's easy to, you know, have one person be ignored, but when a class or a cohort can really be able to bring their voices together, helps to be able to make some of that nimbleness happen more quickly right now. And, you know, the time that this episode gets published, you know, we're at the end of a semester, but it's something where you are empowered to bring that collective voice together, because that is something that is really hard to ignore, especially if you're consistent with your message and don't just give it like a one shot, hey, we asked and nothing happened, and now we're just going to complain for the rest of the program.
Yeah. I think that advocacy is a good practice as a therapist, regardless, because advocating for yourself, making sure that you advocate as you start going into practicum and, you know, kind of your pre-licensed positions, I think, regardless of what you're advocating for yourself, or at a certain point when you start advocating for your clients, I think it's good practice. I think the one caveat that I want to just add in there is that I find it frustrating that oftentimes the students are called upon to advocate for themselves. And I think they should. So I'm not saying that they should not. But to me, it seems like, especially with some of these programs that are just hugely expensive, that there should be a mechanism for feedback and not just like, what do you think of your professor? But like feedback on the program as a whole, you know, true assessment of the quality and effectiveness of education. And there's probably a whole other conversation we could have about that element of it. And I think some schools probably are great with it and some are not. But I think, yes, students should advocate. But I think also there's an advocacy that happens with our pocketbooks on which schools we actually choose to attend, that we pay for, that we stay in, that we donate to as alums. And I think we need to be thoughtful about that as well, because schools need to be responsible for the quality of their education and for the ability of their students in getting the jobs for which they have been trained.
We would love for you to collectively advocate to us and join us on our social media, and we'll include links to all of those in our show notes. You can find those at mtsgpodcast.com. You can also join our Facebook group, the Modern Therapist Group, and we post our episodes each week there as well, and you can leave feedback for us, and we'll be checking that. And until next time, I'm Kurt Whithelm with Katie Vernoy.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Therapist Survival Guide. Learn more about who we are and what we do at mtsgpodcast.com. You can also join us on Facebook and Twitter. And please don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any of our episodes.
Don't forget, we have some special offers from our partner, Simplified SEO Consulting. Get 20% off a DIY SEO course with the code MODERNTHERAPIST, or mention the Modern Therapist Survival Guide podcast during your free consultation for $100 off of your onboarding to the Done For You SEO program. Check them out at simplifiedseoconsulting.com/modern therapist.
Remember to check out Thrizer. They are passionate about making out-of-network therapy work for everyone. Clients save upfront on therapy while therapists earn their full rate. Get started in minutes on join.thrizer.com/modern therapist and use the promo code Modern Therapists and receive $2,500 in waived fees for your sessions.